Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 642. Update on the anthrax attacks, AIDS, and biological warfare. This program is being recorded on August 3rd of the year 2008. By the time this program airs on the various stations that carry the broadcast, there will be a new Spitfire website up. It will not replace the old website, but rather will act as a supplemental website. This one will be much more professional looking and much more user friendly, so to speak. The vast amount of information available on the old Spitfire website will obviously be linked and will still be available, but the Spitfire website, if I do say so myself, and the various linked websites are numero uno in terms of content. But the website itself is not the most user-friendly. The new website, however, will be much more professional-looking and user-friendly, and the various stations that carry these programs will have aired roughly a month's worth of older For the Record shows dealing with the UFO phenomenon and the ET myth. This basically is to provide me with a little bit of breathing room, so to speak, as I'm beginning the process of learning how to do the new website. Okay, so by the time you hear this, the description for the Record 642, as well as for 641, will be in the new Spitfire website. And I don't know quite what the title of that will be and the URL and so forth, but we'll have that ready for you. Okay. Alrighty, so we're going to go into the subject material, which, as the title indicates, is an update on the anthrax attacks, AIDS, and biological warfare. We're going to launch right in. There have been a number of developments vis-a-vis the anthrax inquiry that, you remember the anthrax attacks? Yeah, those anthrax attacks, right. Right after September 11th. I've been covering those ever since, and some of the program references that will be of use in the discussion to follow are For the Record Program 317, For the Record Program 324, the last one broadcast shortly before September 11th, and also For the Record Programs 411 and 419. 419 was an update on the anthrax attacks. As you listen to discussion of Fort Detrick, the recent suicide of a Fort Detrick scientist who was a suspect in the anthrax attacks, bear in mind someone else who overlaps the world of American biowarfare research and covert operations. That was the late Dr. Larry Ford of Southern California. Ford had worked for, variously, the Central Intelligence Agency and also the white Afrikaner apartheid regime of South Africa. Specifically, he was working with Project Coast. That was the apartheid regime's biowarfare assassination program. And he was involved with work on, among other things, anthrax and using bioweapons to kill people. He'd also done a lot of research on AIDS. And he committed suicide in 2000 when some of his activities began coming to light. What I wonder about, since he referenced the Turner Diaries as a good summation of his political agenda, the Turner Diaries, of course, authored by the late William Luther Pierce, the head of the National Alliance, one of the most important domestic Nazi organizations, and an individual who did a broadcast in the late 1990s called Stay Out of Tall Buildings, warning people who lived in buildings the size of the World Trade Center in New York City to start wearing hard hats, saying Osama bin Laden is coming, and saying that America would be subjected to biowarfare attacks. And that was in the late 1990s, before the September 11th attacks. I would also note that the Turner Diaries, authored by William Luther Pierce, culminates. The climactic episode of the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack against the Pentagon. Now, of course, that's just a novel, and I'm just a wacky conspiracy theorist from California. Everybody knows that couldn't happen in real life, right? So, as you listen to some of the discussion about Fort Detrick, the Army's top, the military's top biowarfare research center, now occupied, a corner of it occupied by the Army's Research Institute, the Army, anyway, I'll give you the exact title. It researches infectious diseases. Much of the rest of Fort Detrick is turned over to the National Cancer Institute for its viral oncology research program, although it was maintained for them by Litton Bionetics, a wholly owned biotechnology subsidiary of major defense contractor and covert operations vehicle Litton Industries. But remember Larry Ford, and some of the program references to keep in mind are, again, for the record, 317, 324, 411, and 419. This past week, there was a key suicide in connection with the anthrax investigations, and we're going to reference the New York Times of Saturday, August 2nd of 2008, an article by Scott Shane and Eric Lichtblau, Dateline Washington, headlined, "Scientist's Suicide is Linked to Anthrax Inquiry, Subheaded Charges Loomed for Worker at Army Lab." After 4 years pursuing one former Army scientist on a costly false trail, FBI agents investigating the deadly anthrax letters of 2001 finally zeroed in last year on a different suspect, another Army scientist from the same Biodefense Research Center at Fort Detrick in Frederick, Maryland. Over the last 18 months, even as the government battled a lawsuit filed by the first scientist, Stephen J. Hatfill, investigators built a case against the second one, Brucey Ivins, a highly respected microbiologist who had worked for many years to design a better anthrax vaccine. Last weekend, after learning that federal prosecutors were preparing to indict him on murder charges, Dr. Ivins, a 62-year-old father of two, took an overdose of Tylenol with codeine. He died in a Frederick hospital on Thursday, leaving behind a grieving family and uncertainty about whether the anthrax mystery had finally been solved. The apparent suicide of Dr. Ivins, a Red Cross volunteer and amateur juggler who had won the Defense Department's highest civilian award in 2003, was a dramatic turn in one of the largest criminal investigations in the nation's history. The attack, the only major act of bioterrorism on American soil, came in the jittery aftermath of the September 11th attacks. It killed five people, sickened 17 others, and set off a wave of panic. In the early days after the letter attacks in September and October of 2001, Dr. Ivins joined about 90 of his colleagues at the Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases in a round-the-clock laboratory push to test thousands of samples of suspect powder to see if they were anthrax. Later in April 2002, he came under scrutiny in an Army investigation of a leak of potentially deadly anthrax spores outside a sealed-off lab at Fort Detrick. He later admitted he had discovered the leak, but not reported it. Whether the focus on Dr. Ivins had resolved the case of the anthrax letters was unclear. A federal law enforcement official said that Dr. Ivins had been regarded as a strong suspect, and that agents had been nearing an arrest, and a lawyer familiar with the investigation said he believed that prosecutors had planned to charge only Dr. Ivins. The link between Dr. Ivins' suicide and the federal investigation was first reported on Friday in the Los Angeles Times. So, as to Dr. Ivins' possible culpability in this, I can't say. Stephen Hatfill, by the way, who was the previous suspect and who now appears to have been falsely impugned in this contest, has since filed lawsuits, very briefly, from the same issue of the New York Times. A one-time person of interest moves a step closer to public exoneration. It's by Charlie Savage, Dateline, Washington. Having been named a person of interest, unquote, in the investigation of the 2001 anthrax attacks, the former Army scientist, Stephen J. Hatfill, has tried for 6 years to clear his name, both inside court and out. Now, the disclosure that a former colleague died this week, apparently by suicide, just as investigators prepared to seek his indictment on the case, has provided the clearest indication yet that Dr. Hatfill may finally achieve his goal. The Justice Department, which has not publicly exonerated Dr. Hatfill, would not comment about the case on Friday, but all indications are that investigators have lost interest in him. One of the things that I find curious, and again, I cannot speak as to the individual guilt or innocence of any individual, including Dr. Hatfill. Something that I found very interesting was that in the book The Enemy of My Enemy, which I've used in the past, it's about the areas of intersection and cooperation between the Nazi and white supremacist movements and the Islamist movements, it mentions that Dr. Hatfield, who at that time of the writing and publication of the book was the chief suspect in the investigation, mentions that Dr. Hatfield had worked with white Afrikaner resistance. Same initials, by the way, as white American resistance, the white supremacist group headed by Tom Metzger. Timothy McVeigh was, according to some accounts, a member of that group, and as I've discussed in connection with the AMIA bombing, an FBI investigation into the AMIA bombing disclosed that many of the Argentine law enforcement individuals implicated at the operation level of that bombing were members of white Aryan resistance. Yeah, it's not white American resistance, white Aryan resistance. The same initials as white Afrikaner resistance. White Afrikaner resistance was a post-apartheid Afrikaner slash white supremacist organization. It was headed up at one point by a guy named Eugène Terre Blanche. That's French, by the way, for white world. And basically, it sought to perpetuate the policies not only of the apartheid government, but more importantly, the ideology of the Bruderbond. Now, the Bruderbond, or Brotherhood in English, it's Bruderbond in Afrikaans, the Bruderbond was the core fascist organization of the apartheid regime in South Africa, and it was a direct offshoot of the Nazi Party in Germany. The Bruderbond was structured along the lines of the NSDAP, the German Nazi Party under Hitler, which dispatched a fellow named Graf Durkheim von Montmartre to South Africa to organize the Bruderbond along the lines of the NSDAP, the German Nazi Party under Hitler, and as a political ally abroad. The apartheid regime of South Africa became, not surprisingly, one of the areas of refuge for the Nazi diaspora that took place at the end of World War II when the Third Reich entered its underground post-war phase. And one of the things that I've noted in connection with the aforementioned Dr. Larry Ford, again, who worked for CIA, who worked with biowarfare, who worked with the Afrikaner regime, who worked with Project Coast, the apartheid regime's biological warfare and assassination program. One of the things that Dr. Ford was involved with was anthrax and basically developing biological warfare weapons on behalf of the Afrikaner regime, the apartheid regime. He also, according to information presented again in For the Record programs 317, 324, and again in 419, Dr. Larry Ford also appears to have been involved with a post-apartheid underground Bruderbond and was basically staying in touch with them as part of their apparent operational biological warfare capability. And indeed, one of the people quoted in an article from LA Magazine described one of these apartheid-era officials as saying, "How fast could you get your family out of the country if you had to?" Implying that the post-apartheid underground Bruderbond had the same capability as the apartheid regime, and one wonders if the aforementioned Dr. Larry Ford, who referenced the Turner Diaries in order to give indication to his political agenda, one wonders if Dr. Larry Ford might have had one wonders if Larry Ford worked for CIA. He also had access to BW weapons. He worked with the Afrikaner regime. One wonders if he might have had something to do with the anthrax attacks, and if perhaps, although Stephen Hatfield may not have been involved in the anthrax attacks per se, his involvement with white Afrikaner resistance certainly suggests an evidentiary tributary connecting him to Larry Ford, and one wonders if perhaps underground Reich elements got a hold of some of the Fort Detrick-generated anthrax strains and used those in the attacks, and whether that is the reason why Stephen Hatfield became a focal point of the investigation. And again, I think the late Larry Ford and whatever capabilities he may have communicated vis-a-vis anthrax is something that needs to be investigated, although, again, Stephen Hatfield appears to have been exonerated. Certainly, the investigation is moving in that direction. His involvement with white Afrikaner resistance and Fort Detrick and Larry Ford's involvement with the apartheid regime, a post-apartheid underground brooder bond, and biowarfare raises some very interesting questions. In connection with the anthrax attacks, we're going to move on to another article about those. I want to mention three things very quickly. In the summer of 2001, Bayer's stock had taken a huge tumble due to a high blood pressure treatment medicine that turned out to be producing some lethal adverse effects in some of its users. Then, when the anthrax attacks happened, Bayer's stock soared because they were the makers of Cipro, the antidote of choice for people threatened with anthrax. That is something to think about because Bayer and the other German core corporations are central elements of the Bormann Capital Network, the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground. Reference the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late heroic Paul Manning. I would also note in that context as well that the Baader-Meinhof gang, or the Red Army faction as they came to be known, a group of extreme left-wing German terrorists, who were protégés of the late François Genoux. They, at one point, were proposing sending anthrax-laced letters to public officials. Now, the Baader-Meinhof gang never got around to that, but I would note in this regard that Horst Mahler, who was associated with the Baader-Meinhof gang and is now a Nazi-slash-white supremacist and associated with the German NPD, the top German Nazi organization, and a close associate of Ahmed Huber, a director of the bank Al-Taqwa, Horst Mahler was a member of Baader-Meinhof gang, or an associate of the Baader-Meinhof gang. And again, although they were far left-wing terrorists, they were protégés of the late François Genoux, who was deeply involved with various Middle Eastern slash Islamic fascist terrorist organizations. François Genoux was deeply involved with the bank Al-Taqwa, the financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic fascist organization that is the parent of Al-Qaeda and Hamas, also Palestinian Islamic Jihad and others. François Genoux, a name well known to veteran listeners to the program, was the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And the Baader-Meinhof gang were his protégés, as were many of the people in the bank Al-Taqwa. So again, some of the fascist-slash-Nazi-slash-underground Reich evidentiary tributaries to be pursued. Bayer, Cipro, their collapsing stock in the summer of 2001, which took off after the anthrax attacks. The Baader-Meinhof scenario in which they were proposing to send anthrax-laced letters to officials, which later happened in the U.S., the Horst Mahler link to Genoux, the Horst Mahler link to Bank Al-Taqwa, and again, Larry Ford, the Afrikaner-slash-underground brooder bond, via biowarfare for Dietrich. Does Stephen Hatfield's association with white Afrikaner resistance play into that in some capacity? Did the investigators have the right string but the wrong yo-yo in that regard? Again, these are questions that need to be answered. I've asked them. Don't hold your breath for the answers. More about Fort Detrick and the anthrax attacks. This is from Fox News. FBI focusing on about four suspects in 2001 anthrax attacks. This is from March 28th of this year. And by the way, Dr. Ivins bit it in late July of 2008. This article, again, from Fox News, Dateline Washington, by Catherine Herridge and Ian McCaleb. It reads in part, "The FBI has narrowed its focus to about four, unquote, suspects in the 6.5-year investigation of the deadly anthrax attacks of 2001, and at least three of those suspects are linked to the Army's bioweapons research facility at Fort Detrick in Maryland," Fox News has learned. Among the pool of suspects are three scientists, a former deputy commander, a leading anthrax scientist, and a microbiologist linked to the research facility known as USAMRIID. The FBI has collected writing samples from the three scientists in an effort to match them to the writer of anthrax-laced letters that were mailed to two U.S. senators and at least two news outlets in the fall of 2001, a law enforcement source confirmed. The anthrax attacks began shortly after the September 11, 2001 terror attacks, further alarming a nation already reeling from the deaths of 3,000 Americans. Five people were killed, and more than a dozen others were infected by the deadly spores in the fall of 2001. A leading theory is that the anthrax was stolen from Fort Detrick and then sealed inside the letters. A law enforcement source says the FBI is essentially engaged in a process of elimination. Well, who knows what that is, although there's no indication that Dr. Ivins was killed. I wonder if somebody else might be in a process of elimination. Certainly that is interesting because it indicates that Dr. Ivins was one of about four suspects. Now, even if Stephen Hatfill was the second, well, that leaves two Fort Detrick-connected scientists or personnel as yet unnamed. And again, I wonder about the Stephen Hatfill connection to white Afrikaner resistance. I wonder about Larry Ford, and these are questions to be answered. Larry Ford, by the way, was looking into he was involved with AIDS research, and one of the things that we looked at in For the Record Program 324 is that Project Coast, the apartheid regime's biowarfare and biowarfare assassination program, did use AIDS as a vehicle for political assassination. I've done vast numbers of programs, or I've done a lot of programming, I should say, over the years about AIDS as a biological warfare weapon, specifically a genetically engineered monkey virus. And the last of those was For the Record program number 604, recorded just about a year ago in August of 2007. In For the Record 604, we took a look at the fact that there is a hereditary genetic immunity to infection by HIV. This same factor appears to have been a factor which provided inherited protection against the plague in Europe. And one of the things that we looked at in that broadcast was that there is a theory now gaining acceptance that the plagues which ravaged Europe hundreds of years ago were not actually bubonic plague, as we have come to know it, but rather a hemorrhagic fever that was imported into Europe after some of their first contacts with Africa. And again, the CCRD hereditary immunity to HIV infection is present only in purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans. And again, for the details on that, For the Record program number 604, I also noted that a person of great interest to the Allies in the wake of World War II was the German scientist or the German intelligence operative based in Spain who was getting primates from Africa for Nazi biological warfare research. And initially, the Nazi BW and CBW research went into, it was conducted on primates. Eventually, it was conducted on live concentration camp victims, thus mirroring the process of development of AIDS, a monkey virus that through accident, which I don't believe, or deliberate purpose, which I do believe, was adapted to human beings, and a disease against which there is a hereditary protection only purebred Northern Europeans have that gene. And I wonder about the requisition for this African scientist, this German scientist based in Spain who was getting African primates for research. This individual, as we looked at in For the Record 604, appears to have been involved with the Bormann Capital Network, and certainly they didn't need him to teach Allied scientists how to get primates out of Africa. It was obviously something else. What was it? And we also took a look at the fact that the German virological and bacteriological warfare program under Dr. Eric Traub, who was brought into the United States and installed at the head of the Plum Island Laboratory doing research into animal diseases, the Nazi BW warfare program was a cancer research program. And Dr. Traub reported directly to Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS. And again, I wonder about that, and I wonder about the fact that there is a hereditary, basically a hereditary protection, a hereditary immunity to AIDS that is present only in purebred Northern Europeans. Also, bear in mind that South Africa is one of the areas hardest hit by AIDS. Africa in general is getting hit very hard by AIDS. Note the following. This was from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, July 17th of 2008. This is an article by Sabin Russell of the Chronicle. It's headlined, "Newfound Genetic Clue to HIV Rate Among Blacks." An international team of AIDS scientists has discovered that a gene variant common in blacks protects against certain types of malaria, but increases susceptibility to HIV infection by 40%. Researchers keen to find some biological clues to explain why people of African descent are bearing a disproportionate share of the world's AIDS cases, suspect this subtle genetic trait, found in 60% of American blacks and 90% of Africans, might partly explain the difference. 10% of the world's population lives in sub-Saharan Africa, but that region accounts for 70% of the men, women, and children living with HIV infection. In the United States, African Americans make up 12% of the population, but account for half of newly diagnosed HIV infections. So again, I wonder about Project Coast. I wonder about the Bruderbond connection. I wonder about Dr. Traub. I wonder about Dr. Franz Lisau Zacharias, the German intelligence operative who was getting monkeys from Africa, primates from Africa, for Nazi CBW research. And I wonder about the hereditary immunity to AIDS infection present only in purebred Northern Europeans, and another genetic factor that makes black folks, particularly African blacks, particularly susceptible to HIV. By the way, also, I want to reference people to the book Dr. Mary's Monkey. That is Ed Haslam's latest opus. More interesting research in that is discussed in that book into biological warfare and genetically engineered monkey viruses. Interestingly, one of the viral contaminants in the polio vaccine was SIV. The simian immunodeficient deficiency virus, which is basically causes monkey AIDS, so to speak. It causes a collapse of the immune system in primates, and it was a contaminant in the human in the polio vaccine made from monkey kidneys that was administered to human beings. The SV40, a deadly cancer-causing monkey virus, was also a contaminant, and that is the focal point of Ed's book. And that wraps up For the Record program number 642. Please do utilize the websites that are supplemental to the For the Record broadcast. Those of you who only listen on air or on the websites that carry the program are missing the greater part of the For the Record experience, so to speak. For the Record 641 and 642 and 643, which I'm about to record, will be the first descriptions on the new, much more professional, much more user-friendly Spitfire website. The old Spitfire website will be available because there's such a vast amount of information. It'll take a lifetime practically to get it all converted. But the old website will be available, but the descriptions from 641 on will be in the new Spitfire website. So please be aware of that by the time this program airs on the various stations that get the program. The new Spitfire website will be abornin', so to speak. Please do use both new and old Spitfire websites, the vast amount of information there, the descriptions for the Record shows, the mini library of old anti-fascist books available for download for free with introductions by yours truly, as well as the websites maintained by sister station WFMU featuring the entire For the Record series on streaming and or download real audio. And also the FTR supplemental blog site and the FTR blog as well, because there's a vast amount of information. Please use it, and please do everything you can to disseminate it using the internet and or talk shows. This concludes For the Record program number 642, update on the anthrax attacks, AIDS, and biological warfare, being recorded on August 3rd of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.